arthritis and the changes that happen in the two articulating surfaces of the auricular cartilage, and how when they become ragged like this and decompose and decompensate, they rub on each other. And as Cindy had mentioned to us, because you had been in the OR, what, the day before we were talking about that or something like that, and had seen a total knee replacement and saw the old knee that was taken out. And so there was nothing left.
No, it was very minute.
Yeah. Right.
From a distance, the healthy.
Yes.
It wasn't a pretty.
No, it's not.
A pretty surgery.
It's not a pretty surgery, and it's much of the joint replacement surgery that goes on looks kind of exhausting from the orthopedic surgeon's point of view. I mean, they really work hard, don't they, with what they have to do. This is a muscular kind of thing. I've never known a female orthopedic surgeon, but however, there must be. There must be. Have you ever?
She was huge.
She was huge.
she was actually a cop. And
yeah.
She became an orthopedic surgeon, and she was like 6'2". Especially with the femur.
It's hard work. Yes.
You know, doing the reducing, they really have to have some strength behind them.
Yes, they do.
Putting the rods in, they really smash those.
Yes, as you saw in the humerus.
Well, two of them.
The humerus. I mean, it is hard work, and they do have to have muscle. They are. It's like being a heavy construction worker.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. When you said the cop, that reminded me of 2 years ago. I had an automobile accident in a snowstorm coming home from clinical when it was canceled early because of terrible snow, and somebody was coming toward me, and nobody was doing anything wrong, you know, just total and all that kind of stuff, and we were waiting for the police to come, and they did come, and two of them were supposed to come. However, one of the cops who was supposed to come had an accident on the way there and spun out and ended up in the ditch, and it was just one of those days. But anyway, the one who was there was a female police officer, and she ended up, after all the paperwork and all that, the tow trucks and all that stuff was done, taking the two of us home. And she took the first person home first because she lived closer, and then she took me home and started asking me what I did and different kinds of things. Came to find out that she was an RN, had been an RN, had gone to, I think, Brookdale, but I'm not sure about that, then went on for her BSN, and worked in several areas of nursing in two or three different hospitals, Jersey Shore, Monmouth Medical, worked in the ER for 5 years. And she said, I just couldn't find my niche. And something in the ER came up about some kind of forensic thing. She got involved in a project or was on a committee for the hospital or something. I can't remember the details of that. And she said, now, I like that. I like that, but I could only go so far with. I couldn't go where I wanted to go. And I finally, after a while, decided that I needed to change fields. And so she went into, she left nursing and went to the police academy and now was finishing up, had spent her time, you have to spend in a couple years or something like that, and then was going to be a detective and was doing other things. But when she saw my books and saw the things in the car, she immediately wanted to know that because that was her background. So you never know where you're going to see a nurse, right? Or you were talking about the orthopedic surgeon who was the female. So back to this. When the cartilage, and I had talked a little bit about glucosamine and chondroitin, just because that's such a popular and well-used supplement situation, that does seem to work for a lot of people. Nothing ever works 100% for everybody. So, and it takes a long time before it kicks in. Okay. Osteoarthritis, and that's what the OA stands for. And here are some risk factors for. Some of them are preventable, and many of them are not preventable. Not anything that one can do something about. Certainly getting older is not only a risk factor for osteoarthritis, it's probably the largest or biggest risk factor for the development of any malignancy in the body. Female gender, genetic predisposition. So the top three there, and these are not in any priority order, but the top three are things that are simply factors, not anything that can be changed. Then you get into obesity, mechanical joint stress, joint trauma, previous bone or joint disorders, which may or may not be something that you can do anything about, and a history of other kinds of disease in the inflammatory area. Obesity is certainly something that can be dealt with. However, in this country, it is not being dealt with very efficiently. I was in a place yesterday and looking at some of the serving sizes of the dessert, stopped for a cup of coffee at a place, and they had one of these amazing arrays of things. And I have been doing some studying of obesity and different countries in the world, and serving size seems to be a big thing. If you go to certain European countries, they will have beautiful, beautiful arrays of foods, but the serving sizes are much more doable. The serving sizes in this country seem to all be very mega. And if you look at the wording on any of the fast food places, it's everything is bigger and best kind of thing. So obesity is a real problem in this country, and it's a real problem for osteoarthritis, and it's a real problem for many of the people who have knee replacement surgery. Signs and symptoms, nothing real esoteric here. Perhaps several people in this room have already personally experienced the fourth one down, the crepitus. Crepitus is something that you can experience when you're a teenager, that sort of grating kind of noise as things move with joint movements. However, joint tenderness is not something that adolescents experience, nor is limitation of motion, stiffness, or pain. Those are other significant symptoms of osteoarthritis. And at the top of this, you see weight reduction. Weight reduction, if it's indicated, prevention of injuries, job stress management. Now, what do you suppose that means? Does that mean mental or emotional stress? No, it really means mechanical stressors. What are the positions? What are the physical parameters of the job that this person does? Hot showers for comfort. That's just heat, the old heat and cold that we talked about last semester, and heating pads. One of the things that's very popular in a lot of new home building now are these large tubs with whirlpools and that type of thing. In retirement communities, you will see special tubs with that type of thing. And it's a lot of it is indicated toward just comfort measurements for this. So you don't see anything on here that takes a prescription, nothing that takes more than really just some common sense of what's going to make somebody feel a little bit better. However, there are some prescription or there are some pharmacological means to controlling this, but if you look at what's on this slide, these are over-the-counter kinds of items, right? What is the downside or the side effect side of both of these medications, the aspirins or the NSAIDs?
Ulcers,
stomach problems, any GI distress. Might be peptic ulcer disease, might be GERD, might be various kinds of things, but certainly the anti-inflammatories always have that, especially when the dosing gets quite high as a problem. And now osteoporosis, and you got this handout the other day about bone mineral density and a decrease in it. And actually what happens is the bony matrix becomes more of a, what they call a lace curtain, has more of a lace curtain look, and you can see through it. It has almost looks like a filter kind of thing, but it's not nice and tightly meshed. So it's a decrease in the interlocking of the bone cells. And this leads to an increased fragileness to these bones, an increased propensity to be brittle and to makes the person very prone to fracture. Certainly dietary calcium, dietary intake of vitamin D is an important component. Why is this a problem with postmenopausal women? And you can got this handout here. What happens in postmenopausal women to make this a bigger problem? The decrease in estrogen, right? And in the first 5 years after menopause is when the steep decrease really happens, and that's when this woman is more vulnerable. For many years up until about 2 years ago, be soon 3 years ago, when the Women's Health Initiative study, the results of that came out, it was very common for gynecologists to prescribe hormone therapy, replacement hormone therapy, for women at this time of their life, maybe for a short term, maybe for a longer term. Basically for a couple of reasons. One of them for osteoporosis or the prevention of for bone density. The other, they thought at that time, was that it enhanced their cardiovascular health. And it was the Women's Health Initiative study that pointed out, and looking at things more definitively, that women were not protected from cardiovascular disease by estrogen. That's basically what it said. So it became very much an issue within that community, and they did change what they did. So now you're not seeing so many women have the estrogen replacement therapy. One of the arguments that some people, not everybody agrees with this, these were results that came out and got truly saturated by the media, in all kinds of ways that did not necessarily talk about the true numbers and what this really, really meant. They really only wanted the flash kinds of things that would get the eye. The true numbers and the true differences were very minuscule. But the issue about the cardiovascular disease was true. They were not giving this woman protection from heart disease. However, there was protection from fracture. There was seemed to be a lower rate of colon cancer, and they've never really been able to explain that. And those were for women who were getting the combined estrogen and progesterone. That would be for women who still had a uterus. And if you're giving estrogen to a woman who has a uterus, you have to give her progestin-type product also so that the endometrium on the inside of the uterus does not build up so much. It leads to higher rates of endometrial cancer. However, there is still a leg of that study that was going on until just a few months ago, and that, or not, they don't call it a leg, it's an arm, an arm of that study that was going on, where they just gave women estrogen only, and this was for women who'd had hysterectomy. And what did those show? And they did not show the rise in heart disease or in stroke or in anything else. So at that point, there really was nothing going on with that. So it's a controversial thing for many people. Some people will look at this and say, well, if a woman's estrogen level goes down like this, and her osteoporosis risk goes up like this, and the fracture possibility also increases, and she does have fractures, and this starts to change her life a little bit, how does that risk compare to taking the estrogen, which might not give her protection from cardiovascular disease, but might, and it's an argument, okay? It's an argument that's constantly going on. Why would the last one come up? We've talked about that a little bit in the first semester. Persons who are immobilized are physically inactive. Why are they at a greater risk for this? Yes. Yes. And when we talked about hypercalcemia, which was when the bones were releasing some of this and there were higher levels of calcium in the bloodstream, that this is a dangerous kind of thing. This has all kinds of problems associated with it. And one of the nursing interventions for this, if it's at all possible, is to move this person, to mobilize them, to do some weight bearing, or have them, if they can't weight bear, do anything to mobilize, because then it keeps that calcium more in the bone. Okay, risk factors for osteoporosis. Now, this is probably something you can pick up Red Book magazine or McCall's or Ladies Home Journal or anything like this and pick up this list. This is not anything that should be really new to many of you. And, of course, one of the key things on here is being female. Now, not a risk factor that you can control for. However, because that is such an association with osteoporosis, and that is the female gender, that it is easy to forget that men, too, can get osteoporosis, can have brittleness of bones or thinning or lace bark bones, as they're called. They, too, can have that. It is a smaller percentage of the whole population who can succumb to osteoporosis. But it should be thought of when a man presents with fractures that really don't make any sense. He's a little bit younger than you would expect this for, or there have been two fractures within 1 year, or two or three within a couple of years, and they were from slight things. Not major trauma or anything. That should raise the index of suspicion on the part of that clinician, and so that man should have a bone density test, because it is a possibility. It's really only about 15 to 25% of the population with osteoporosis, but it is a possibility. Being Caucasian is, in other words, people of color do not have this as much of a problem as being Caucasian does. Here's an advertisement for exercise in here. And where does that come in? When you look at this list, which one is it? If I say an advertisement for exercise, sedentary, being sedentary, right. We've never seen anything good about being sedentary, right? Right. Being a smoker and a drinker, And I don't mean that excessively. Alcoholism is listed there as a separate thing. But in the 50s and the 60s, Professor Whitman was talking when she was talking about diabetes and talking about how children were raised at that time and what women did in terms of cleaning their house and were not going out to work. It was not the common thing to do. There was another portion of women in that group that I remember as a kid when I was being raised. They were mothers and they had kids and so forth, but they sort of didn't toe the line. They would never have made it into the Betty Crocker hallmark of fame. Okay, I remember, and I thought they were kind of cool actually. They bowled more. They smoked. They sat around, drank a lot of coffee, and smoked, and talked and giggled and they would have some drinks. I'm not saying they were heavy drinkers or anything. They laughed a little louder. They were a little rougher around the edges. And I came from a very straight-laced family that I thought was a little dull, you know? So these women look kind of interesting to me. That's why I wanted to try smoking, because I really thought that was pretty cool. However, if you have the coffee and cigarette habit, okay, it puts you at greater risk. That's the only point that I'm making here. But coffee and cigarettes, one of the reasons that women will do that, and even in today's world with all the information that we have, is because then they don't eat as much and they stay thin. And look at the bottom risk factor here as being thin. Can't win, right? Okay, if you look at this picture and look at this top this part up here. This is a comparison to normal bone, and you can see the density and the difference in the density between osteoporotic bone and normal bone. And you can see when these things are pulled apart and you don't have quite the compactness, it just sort of makes sense visually that you have less strength in that bone. And frequently when people go down, and I'll say women because it's more frequently with women, and have a fall, they don't know if it's that the fracture occurred and then they fell, or they fell and had the fracture. Maybe they fell because there was a little TIA or something else, or maybe they weren't paying attention and just tripped like anybody can do. But sometimes they don't know. Sometimes this could have happened ahead of time. Okay, just an example of what osteoporosis can do to the vertebral column. And the changes that are being noted here are in the thoracic vertebrae. And what happens is the anterior part, anterior being, if you're thinking of the spinal column, anterior, the part that's toward the front of the body, okay, the bony part of that portion of the vertebrae starts to collapse, starts to become less dense, and starts to collapse on itself. And when it does that, you can see what happens. There's a compression of those vertebrae. And what happens here then in the actual total column is that there's not enough to structurally hold the upper back upright. So then the neck and the shoulders come forward a little bit. In addition to what happens there on the front, look at the front of this picture and you will see the abdominal wall starts to come out a little bit. When this happens, it pulls the chest cavity forward a little bit, decreases the thoracic space, can bring the ribs forward. It can be so severe in some women, you will occasionally see this on men, but much more frequently on women, that the bottom of the ribs, and I may have mentioned this in this class, will actually rub on the, what's this part of the hip bone? What's the official name? I can't remember the official name.
Iliac crest.
Iliac crest, that sound right? Yeah, in the front, iliac crest, okay. Not good, not to the point that it's a fracture or anything. And a major problem, and I think I did mention this, for women who are very concerned about their appearance, is this makes clothing very hard to get their clothing to fit right anymore. And the question on here is how might this posture change related to osteoporosis contribute to a fall? See how it throws things off posture-wise and then also just visually not being able to see. Now, there are things that they could do now. They put stents in sometimes, and like little wedge kinds of things, and push that apart so that you don't get this far forward type of thing. This can be very painful for some women, and it can be totally silent for others. So there's quite a variety on this, and it doesn't have to happen on everybody. I'm not predicting and saying that is a given, but I'm sure you have seen it, and that is what happens, and that's what contributes to the height loss, height diminishment. Okay, so how is osteoporosis dealt with? Dietary intake, richer in vitamin C, D, and calcium. And we've already talked about HRT, and I didn't talk about CIRM, which is a slightly different kind of estrogen replacement type thing. Does not have nearly the association with breast cancer. Anybody know what the next to the laxed one? That's the name of a drug that is the generic name for a drug, and I bet if I mention the trade name for the drug, you would immediately say, oh yes, it's the drug, I'm going to keep giving you hints, it's going to be like charades, This is the drug that women take. They used to have to take it once a day and not have anything to eat or drink for a half an hour, Fosamax. Now they have it in a weekly dose kind of thing. This is Fosamax. Fosamax. Right, Fosamax. They have a weekly dose so that they take this and they can't go back to bed. You know, they have to stay upright. And they can't have a cup of coffee or a cup of tea or a glass of water or anything. They have to find other things to do. And they can't go have their cereal or their whatever they like to do. They have to change that. So they can get up and take it and take a shower, or they take the dog out, or they can go out and fiddle in the garden if it ever gets warm, or, you know, they can do other things, but they have to find something else to do. Rolling over in bed and taking another 30 minutes of sleep is not the option. It's because of the gastric reflux that it can cause. It causes some really severe gastric burning sometimes. And this, they have learned, is a way of preventing that. It's just to make sure that this person's body is upright.
They have to wait 1 hour, don't they?
Half hour. It depends on how set in their ways somebody is and at what age they start to take this and if they have if they take medications at all or if they take anything regularly. If they have lived a fairly long life and not had to take anything, this becomes a real intrusion on a matter of control, if you will, of what how they want to do things. I don't want to do it that way. I want to do it this way. She wanted to do that, right? And so that asked for a change.
None of her other medications were...
They weren't restrictive like that. And on something like that and things like that will cause a change, you just have to figure out if you're going to be compliant or not and get your head around it and find a way to make it work, if that's what you're going to do. Okay, just some general interventions and ways of maintaining movement in a person and reducing the risk for falls. And these are common sense kinds of things. Again, there's nothing very esoteric here. These all happen to be a list for home items, home safety items. Use their space widely, wisely. Controlling the clutter. Doesn't have a mind of its own. Has anybody ever had a trouble with clutter and how it kind of grows on its, especially when you're in school and you've got piles of your own new things on top of your household, new things, right? And where it is, right?
And animals.
Yes.
Trip over animals.
I bought a dog on Saturday. It's the kind of dog that you don't have to feed or walk. He's green. I've seen this little thing. Seaside Furniture had a sidewalk type sale. I told you I felt like playing this weekend, and I was out doing some things, and lost my notes. But anyway, no, I'm sure they're safe. They're safe somewhere. I've been looking at this little dog. It's a Yorkie. Short. Cute little thing. Little statue type thing. Fits just perfectly in this room. I talked him down on price. And now I've got a dog. I think that's the best kind of dog to have, right? I've had dogs for years, but I don't have a dog anymore. Okay. Let's move into the autoimmunities area. And like I said, since I'm not... This I don't have so much on the top of my head. I will make a copy of these notes, and I will give them to you, okay? In general, the autoimmunities are when the immune system in a person's body forgets how to identify self, how to discriminate between what's self and what's non-self. Our immune system is an extremely important part of our makeup, to protect us from invaders and to protect us from problems of infection. But this is This is what can happen when it turns on itself. And there are three decisions or three conditions that we're going to look at that have this as an autoimmune base. And notice the term here, diffuse connective tissue disease. Connective tissue disease. And that's why it's here in the musculoskeletal part. And you do have some of this on, you have this on the on this today's handout, don't you? You have,
two.
You only have, I know you don't. I don't know why that other one didn't get in there. It was supposed to, but it did not. Probably just a problem that I had with the computer. And then I say two conditions, and it really should be three. But these are grouped or clumped into the musculoskeletal area, but not of bony tissue, of connective tissue. There is suspicion that there are many more autoimmune kinds of problems that just have not been identified as such. Rheumatoid arthritis, the word to circle here is chronic. Another word, systemic, meaning all over. Okay. However, there are some joints that are affected more than others. And if you look at these joints, it looks like ankles is spelled wrong. Since the time that I took my first typing course many, many years ago, I always get the D and the K mixed up, and I still do occasionally. Hands, wrists, and ankles. Anybody know anybody with rheumatoid arthritis? Do you notice anything about their hands, wrists, or ankles? What? They're swollen. And they kind of drift, don't they? It's called drifting. They drift to the outside a little bit. Yeah. You know somebody? There are some newer and much better medications for rheumatoid arthritis now that are helping. But this can be a devastating disease, and the level of pain. There's even something used to be known as juvenile rheumatoid arthritis that can happen to very young children. And this can be very, very difficult to manage. So the pathophysiology begins in the synovial tissue, slightly different than the articular cartilage, or auricular cartilage. And this is an example of the inflammatory response going a little out of control. And when that happens, the enzymes that are produced because of this glitch in this immune system turns on the collagen and starts to break that down. And when that happens, it starts to cause swelling or edema. Definition of a word called pannus, which is a word that's associated with this type of arthritis. And it's something that's seen in chronic rheumatoid arthritis. And rheumatoid arthritis is referred to as RA. This is a very standard kind of abbreviation for it, as is HA, a standard abbreviation for headache, any kind of headache. Picture here showing a slightly different type of thing. The synovial swelling. And you can see how that's different up in there than the articular or auricular capsule. When we were looking at osteoarthritis, we were looking at that capsule around the ends of the bones right in here and the components that made up that watery, very lubricated capsule that could rub on one another. Here we're looking at the synovium itself inside there. So it's a different area that is affected. And you can see that some of these symptoms are not so focused on the joint themselves. Certainly that's there, but they are more systemic. They are a little bit grander when you look at fatigue, weight loss, fever, malaise. Those are the whole system. Those are systemic. Morning stiffness. This is a hallmark. A hallmark symptom of rheumatoid arthritis. However, there are people with osteoarthritis that also notice that they have more stiffness in the morning, so it's sometimes a little tricky. Pain both at rest and with movement. Nighttime pain interferes with sleep. The term boggy is a term that fits certain situations in medicine, and this is a term that kind of describes what on palpation is felt. The term boggy is a term that's used for a uterus that is not contracting after childbirth, after the fetus is out and the placenta is out, and that uterus, under the response of hormones, is supposed to stay hard like a grapefruit. Stay really clamped so that there is no excessive bleeding. If it starts to not stay so hard for whatever reason and starts to come out a little bit, on external palpation, on that lower abdomen, it will feel boggy. It's more of a give to it that should not be. Okay, so boggy is a term that is used with this kind of joint. How is it looked for? How is it diagnosed? History and physical. SED rate. SED rate is one of those, and I've talked about this before, it's one of those indistinct kinds of tests, or not indistinct, nonspecific is the better word, because it doesn't zero in and say, aha, here's the problem. But what it does say is, something's going on here because these red blood cells aren't settling in the rate that they should. Something's going on here. So it's a very nonspecific test, but it does say that something usually of an inflammatory, infectious type nature could be going on. C-reactive protein, ANA, antibodies, and rheumatoid factor. These are tests that can be used in increasing order to really try to get to the bottom of something. These diseases, rheumatoid arthritis, which is what we're talking about now, is really best managed by a rheumatologist, because there are studies and there are new drugs and there are things that can be managed and used today to really increase the quality of this person's life, but they are best handled by a rheumatologist. So treatment, and I've only got the beginning of the list, and I will give you some more on drugs. Do you have some repeat? I have some repeat on here. Sorry, it is, yes, I just noticed the same thing. So medications, I'm not comfortable going into sort of off the cuff here. I need to have more information. I do have more than that, so I will give you that. Supportive devices if needed. Surgical procedures are sometimes done. It is not a first-line approach. Hot and cold applications if for giving comfort. They need to understand what they're living with here, because the more knowledge they have, the better armed they are. Various nursing diagnoses. may include a variety of things. Certainly, this is a chronic problem. The types of impaired physical mobility might involve such things as driving a car because of the elbows and the shoulders and the wrists, and just being having to hold the arms up and holding the steering wheel might be a problem. It has nothing to do with her mental ability and so forth. And if this is a younger woman who has children that she's carting to different kinds of places, this is a real change. Self-care deficits, again, because of the hands, shoulder, and elbow involvement. In a general form, interventions are designed to prevent further injury and give a little comfort. Now, these people do not generally get hospitalized for the problem of rheumatoid arthritis. You might see somebody who's hospitalized in an acute care center who has this as another co-problem. But these are outpatient people who are living with this and dealing with it in a very different way. They are not usually admitted for this. But when you see somebody with this problem, you need to connect that this is a systemic problem and it's an autoimmune problem.
You know how they have the bulky things for them to hold? Like,
yes.
Couldn't they adapt like a steering wheel?
Mm-hmm. But that won't help the shoulders.
Yeah.
Oh, you mean the space? If they can bring the shoulder. A lot of cars have a steering wheel that come down a little bit. And they will adapt. People are very creative with these things and learn how to do it or to make it work for them. But they would still be limited, say, on going for a long trip or something. It would be too exhausting for them. But doing things locally, they could manage. Okay, SLE, or systemic lupus erythematomus, I can't even say it. Erythematosus. There we go. Ptosis. Another somewhat elusive autoimmune condition. Different body conditions or different body systems may be affected. The one that you will see most frequently. Now, do you have this on your notes? Because I don't have this on my notes. Goes straight to low back pain. Is the skin, and that's why it's listed first, the skin. So it generally starts and is thought of as a more of a surface problem. However, and it is that for some people, sometimes it never goes any further. But it can and does go into other organ systems, joints, kidneys, nervous system, and other organs. So a chronic inflammatory condition of an autoimmune nature. Don't know really what causes it. It is labeled as an autoimmune disease. These autoantibodies attack the good guys, or part of the connective tissue in this person's body. And the particular label given to these anti-nuclear antibodies, or these particular kind of autoantibodies in lupus, as it's frequently referred to, are called ANA, or anti-nuclear antibodies. This can be a bit of a challenge to diagnose because the presenting symptoms for this are similar, the systemic ones are similar to those of rheumatoid arthritis, fatigue, malaise, aches, that kind of thing. Here are the main signs and symptoms. And so if you look at that top list of general symptoms, fever, That's a little different from rheumatoid. Fever, weight loss, fatigue, and arthralgia, aches and pains. And the characteristic hallmark, or the classic, if you will, classic symptom of lupus is the butterfly rash over the nose. And I'm sure there's a picture of this in your Phipps book. The butterfly rash over the bridge of the nose and cheeks can also extend onto the chest. But it does have that look and that shape. Here there's a little, in the third point here, there's a little mimicking then of rheumatoid arthritis, because this is a diffuse connective tissue problem. So pain, stiffness, and swelling in joints. But in doing a differential diagnosis between rheumatoid arthritis and lupus, and doing some of the more specialized tests that they can do for rheumatoid arthritis, they would be able then to have a parting of the ways and see which one was really showing up. Renal kinds of symptoms on the bottom list: blood in the urine, increased cast in the urine, protein in the urine, and an elevated creatinine. So general diffuse symptoms, skin symptoms, musculoskeletal, and renal symptoms. And the list keeps going. And this depends on which organ system, if any organ system, is involved. Cardiopulmonary, and there you have a list of possibilities. There are many people, many women, this is mostly a disease of women, who have lupus, who never develop some of these other organ-based symptoms. Central nervous system, hematologic, and if the hematologic has a problem of anemia, that's the contributing factor to the fatigue that they're experiencing. Look at the next two words, leukopenia and thrombocytopenia. Leukopenia means not enough what?
White blood cells.
And thrombocytopenia means not enough what? Platelets. So if we don't have an adequate platelet count, we have a potential problem with what? Bleeding. Because platelets are important for the clotting mechanism. And if we don't have enough white blood cells, we have a potential problem for what? Infection. And if we don't have enough red blood cells, which is what anemia is, or we don't have a good quality of them, it means what in terms of symptoms? Fatigue, tiredness, no energy, not having a good quality of life, getting through the day. Okay. Making a diagnosis for it is sometimes a little more challenging. Looking for special kinds of antibodies, one that has a specialized name here. This is something that just helps in the differential diagnosis between rheumatoid arthritis and lupus, the anti-Smith antigen antibody. I'm not saying that you have to remember that name. It's just what is used for diagnosing. Medications are overall to reduce the inflammation. And medications to put a lid on this person's immune system. Now, when you put a lid on or a cap on, or you slow down somebody's immune system by giving them some kind of immunosuppressant medications, it means you are making them vulnerable to infection or other things. So along with any medication regime that includes that, they have to really know that. They have to be a participant in this program so that they do not put themselves at unnecessary risk to infection. And so that they are aware that they they have a risk factor to that.
They treat lupus with chemo now.
Yes, they do. Yes, they do. This person has to balance rest with exercise, and this person has to be very tuned into their body and what it's saying to them. And, of course, eating nutritionally adequate. A couple weeks ago when I was at Jersey Shore one day, I had to go down to the office to just check on the office where they deal with students from all different places to see what floors they're on and what they're doing, because I was needing to make sure of the dates for our orthopedic possibilities. And there was a volunteer down there, a woman in her, I would say 70s, although she might have looked, she looked even a little bit older than that, but I'm guessing she was in her 70s. And she had a lot of those badges and things on her volunteer coat, and I said something about, gee, she must have really been doing this for a long time. And she said, actually, yes, she said, I am a nurse. She said, I was a nurse here for many years at Jersey Shore until I was diagnosed with lupus in my 40s. And she said, I was able to continue being a nurse, and she told me where it was. She was very talkative and all that for a while, and it got to a point where she really couldn't do that anymore, but she really wanted to stay connected. So she volunteered, and she had been doing that now for many years. So she said, I have to balance things, and there are some days when I can't show up, that I really just have to rest. It won't work. But this was a woman whose coping skills were very high on the list. She was very, very knowledgeable about her disease and very knowledgeable about her body. And she knew when she could ask certain things of it, and she said, there are other days when I know it's one, and I just give in to it. She doesn't fight it anymore, but she's not stopped either. And she has lived her life at a fairly high quality level is what it seemed to me. But very, very informed on what was going on. Nursing implication, you can see the top thing here is patient education. The more they know, the more they're involved, the better off they are. This person has to either carry an umbrella in the sunny days or wear a hat and always use sunscreen because they're very vulnerable to sun damage. I noticed that, now I've lost your name. Booker?
Christina.
Christina, you're nodding your head a lot. Do you know somebody, a friend with this? And you nodded your head with the sun protection.
I know. If she goes out in the sun, her skin just gets everywhere. It's a bright red, lazy-looking rash.
Okay. So that's a real obvious thing
and
to you.
And she'll swell up, too, right away.
So it's just, yeah. So this is a very real thing, sun protection. Okay. Scleroderma, the third thing that we're putting under here, under these diffuse connective tissue diseases. Now you notice this is connective tissue and an addition here of blood vessel walls. And you see a kind of heavy-duty word. I call this a heavy-duty word. The word being in the second bulleted point here, degeneration. Fibrous degeneration of the connective tissue in different places. Skin, lungs, internal organs. Internal organs, and of the organs that I've got listed here, the ones that are most susceptible to this particular pattern of connective tissue problem. Well, you're writing madly. I'm going to go get a bottle of water, and I will be right back.